other protesters and also the media and organize sort of spontaneous, decentralized actions in New York and in Boston. So some of those people, it was called Text Mob. And Jeremy Scahill, working for your show, has written about the Text Mob service back in 2004. So some of those folks doing that, hacking that technology, in New York in 2004, ended up demonstrating technologies like that to the folks starting Twitter. And it's not to say that radical activists created Twitter, but they certainly brought the ideas of sort of these decentralized communications to the folks who are setting up this larger company.
Right now, Twitter, of course, is down, and yet the people going out in the streets, I mean, we now have reports of millions of people in Egypt out in the streets. So as you said, ultimately, it's not the technology, it's the people.
Well, you know, technologies don't cause anything, but they help people do certain things more easily.
I was also very interested in President Obama saying we support freedom of press, freedom of assembly, and freedom of the internet. Yet, Tim Carr, the last time we were reporting on your organization, Free Press, it was about the FCC, the chair, Jenikowski, not following through, President Obama not following through on a free and open internet.
Right. The pledges that President Obama made while he was a candidate in the first year of his administration to protect net neutrality weren't fulfilled by his chairman at the FCC, Julius Jenikowski, who in December passed what he called the net neutrality order, but which doesn't fully protect wireless networks, doesn't fully protect free speech on the internet as we know it. So that's serious. We have some serious concerns about internet freedom here in the United States as well.
Interestingly, China has blocked keyword searches for the word Egypt, CW.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it's this double-edged sword, right? Technology doesn't create revolutions, it doesn't create social protest, and it can be used to squelch social protest. But at the same time, it can, you know, sort of help these movements, help dissident groups coalesce and then act. If technology didn't help us do that, then why would governments be trying to shut it down?
Google has launched a special service to allow people in Egypt to send Twitter messages by dialing a phone number and leaving a voicemail as internet access remains cut off in the country.
Yeah, and in fact, that idea of sort of text-to-voice talk was pioneered back during the Republican convention in 2004. So you see that these technological hacks have a long history.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us, C.W. Anderson, Assistant Professor of Communications at City University of New York, and thank you to Tim Carr, Campaign Director of Free Press. They're having a big meeting around media democracy in Boston in April. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Shufa Dukadus, Aramonte, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Massoud, Ravi Karan, Jessica Lee, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Nogueira, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant, Jessel Noor, Vesta Goodars, and John Randolph, Kieran Craig Meadows, Rakam Penny, Kellen Innocent. You can go to our website at democracynow.org to follow Sherif Abdelkaddous's tweets as well as his blogs from Tahrir Square. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
A lot can change in just a year or so. A year can take you from this...
So you want the name Sue for your tattoo. Okay.
To this.
Can you change the name Sue into Stephanie Marie? Sure, but you're going to need a lot bigger arm.
Yeah, a lot can change in just a year or so, including your eyes. Please have your precious gift of sight examined every year.
A message from the American Optometric Association.
What a good idea. It's 6:01. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. The time is, again, 6:01. And that means it's time for Off the Wall.
We'll be right back.
And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, along with Kyle.
Yeah, what up?
You know, I guess say that every week.
I'll stop saying it.
Tag phrase there, whatever it is.
Yes, hello.
Hello, how are you? See, that's pleasant. That's a good way to intro a program.
Yes, hello.
Don't have to intimidate the listeners.
How are you doing tonight?
Yo, what up? I'm doing good. I'm doing better than I was last week. And we're not just going to talk about my issues. We're going to talk about what's going on in Egypt because that's interesting. You know, there's a lot of things happening there. We'll get to that.
Millions and millions of things.
Yeah, millions of things. Millions of people. Million-man march without Al Sharpton. That's history in and of itself. But we'll get to that. I'm sure he's there somewhere. He probably mistakenly took a plane over thinking that it was something he needed to be involved in. We'll take phone calls. We'll be happy to listen to our listeners because that's why you're called listeners, so that we listen to you. And talk about other things as well. Yeah, we're still going to talk about guns because guns are always in the news. Always a lot of fun there.
More guns.
But you asked how I was, and by asking that, you triggered me into thinking about this past week and what I went through this past week. Actually, you know, wintertime, you tend to get a little sick sometimes. You feel a little under the weather, and we've had a lot of weather this winter. Oh, my God. Last week... this is a whole other story. We were in the city for Off the Hook, and we had to drive back in the middle of the torrential snowfall, I guess is the only way to describe that. It wasn't technically a blizzard, but boy, it was snowing. It was snowing pretty good. And we drove all the way down the Long Island Expressway at, 20 miles an hour? Very slowly. We saw cars driving the wrong way on the other side because... And this was kind of weird. A bunch of media vans all lined up next to each other at the front of all this traffic. And I don't know why they were doing that, but it just caused this massive traffic jam heading westbound on the LAE. So you saw 18-wheelers driving in the other direction on the westbound lanes, while other 18-wheelers were driving in the right direction, just sort of passing each other calmly. It was weird sights like that, a lot of spun-out vehicles. We saw vehicles spinning out. We saw a lot of abandoned vehicles, but we made it. Our trusty 1993 Toyota Tercel with 251,000 miles on it.
And front-wheel drive.
That's the secret, right?
That's the secret. Yeah, all the rear-wheel drive people were spinning out and getting overconfident. And even the all-wheel drive and the 4x4 fellas.
Pathetic. Sad. It was a sight to see. And, of course, the smart car is useless in situations like this. That's why we take the Tercel if you want to get through any kind of snow. And literally any kind of snow. I can just plow through almost anything. Snowbanks and uphills and various other challenges like that. But we made it all the way back to Long Island. It took us several hours. And then, of course, once we got to our final destination, there was no place to park. The streets weren't plowed. And it was a lot of fun for another couple of hours. Mm-hmm. But eventually, we made it back. In fact, we even called into WUSB. I was going to bring a clip of that. That was a lot of fun. We called into Spiny Norman, who was filling in for Christine, who's on Wednesday nights at midnight. And we were driving, I think I read 347 out here in Suffolk County, and basically telling people, don't drive. It's dangerous to drive. And I guess, you know, in retrospect, it was dangerous for me to drive and talk on the cell phone to tell people it was dangerous to drive. But I like to think that I was putting myself in harm's way for the benefit of others. You know, I mean, I was being selfless.
Right, and getting the message out so that your own travels would be safer, even though you were using the telephone. And I was there
putting you and I at risk.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get into how much risk you put me in throughout that entire adventure. But I was
for the listeners. I put you at risk for the listeners. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing because the listeners deserve to know what's going on. And by driving out in the icy storm like that through snowbanks and in hazardous situations, we were able to tell them.
Yes. Yes. And I was spotting you with the cell phone, you know, just in case you needed to get rid of it.
Yeah. And we called in and, you know... Why don't we put that excerpt, we'll put it up online, we'll put it next to this show on the archives at www.2600.com/offthewall, February 2011. There should be another little button there somewhere, and that'll be us calling in to that program last Wednesday night. So yeah, we went through that challenge. It seems like it snows a lot this winter whenever we have to go someplace. In fact, it's doing it right now. It's not snowing right now, but it's going to ice later on. And, of course, we have to go to Off the Hook tomorrow for a special fundraising edition. and it's going to be another challenge.
Yes, once again, we're bracing for another storm as it rolls in, and it just seems to be sort of coming in waves every time we have to do some sort of traveling or move around.
A different kind of storm. The theme of this storm is ice. The theme of last week's storm was snow and some wind, but this week they're going to be focusing more on the icing part of it. So we'll be slipping a lot, maybe the trees will fall down, power will go out, all kinds of things like that.
Transmitters will freeze up.
Transmitters will freeze up. You know, I think our transmitter froze up a while ago. In fact, I think we're only operating at 15%. I'm not sure about that. I can check the readings. But, yeah, it's kind of weird how ice always attacks us more than any other radio station. Anyway, so, yeah, this kind of weather does put you under the weather occasionally. And that's how I was feeling the last few days. And Friday, it kind of hit this critical mass, so to say. I've been basically feeling kind of under the weather for the last few days.
I've been worried about you.
Yeah, well, you know, I was waking up at the crack of dawn, which right away is a trouble sign, and just finding it hard to breathe, just finding it hard to take in a nice deep breath. And folks, I can't tell you enough. If smokers out there, keep this in mind. Not being able to take a deep breath is one of the worst things in the world, and when you have emphysema, that's something that you kind of give up the right to. Fortunately, I don't do any of that, but it doesn't mean that this kind of thing can't happen occasionally.
You do have allergies, though, and I have allergies as well, and so you were trying to figure out what was going on. And
I'm allergic to winter, or allergic to, I don't know what.
Morons.
Morons. Definitely allergic to morons. But this was special because it really was starting to bug me. Now, keep in mind, I already had a doctor's appointment on Friday that I had made. This is kind of an interesting story in and of itself. When I had my month of health back in September, where I went to see all kinds of doctors and get everything checked out, my main doctor took a look at something on me, a spot on me, and said, I'm not sure I like the looks of that. Go see the dermatologist. Even though I'd just seen a dermatologist a few months earlier, I was supposed to go back to the dermatologist to have that particular thing checked out. I had an appointment for when we were coming back from Canada in October,
right?
But we were held up by customs and interrogated and all that, so that made me sleep later the day that I had the appointment, and I missed the appointment. I got charged for the appointment, but I missed it, and I just finally got around to rescheduling it, and it turned out to be last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
and of course, I go in there, and inside of half a second, the guy says, oh, that's nothing to worry about. What I like to know is, why is it in today's healthcare society that the doctor, that's your general practitioner, can't take the additional amount of training so that he can look at something that takes a dermatologist half a second to say that's nothing, and maybe, okay, take 5 seconds to say that's nothing, but it doesn't seem like it would take that much. If he knows it that quickly, if it's that obvious, I think the regular doctor has enough brains to be able to grasp that as well, don't you?
Yeah, but a referral never hurts, you know?
Well, it doesn't hurt them, that's for sure, because they're getting a good $100 out
of
that.
Right, they got to build relationships with their colleagues.
They
got
to build additions to their homes, Kyle.
That's
really what's going on here. I'm funding their kids' college, or the wing of a college being named after them. It just is a little frustrating, especially when your insurance sucks, like my insurance sucks. I get into all these disagreements and arguments, and things aren't covered, and goes on for a long, long time.
How did you bring this up? You arranged, you got them to coordinate something, because I remember when you weren't feeling well, it was seeming like it was going to take you forever to see anybody at all.
Well, I called. I was up early because I had this appointment that I had to go to anyway.
Right.
So I called my normal doctor, and I said, I'm feeling a little bad here. When can I get an appointment? And she looked up a schedule, said, well, the next appointment is April 4th. And I just was floored by that. If I didn't have trouble breathing before that, I would have had trouble breathing after hearing that. And I said to her, you know, I'm having trouble breathing now. I can't wait till April. I might be out of oxygen by then. Is there anything you can do? And she took pity on me, and she found somebody else that she could give me an appointment
refer you
for
to, yeah.
on that very day,
right,
later on
right,
the
right.
afternoon, which I thought was phenomenal.
Now, when you told me that, I was really thrilled and really relieved because, you know, again, it was just mysterious, and I think you were trying to figure out what was going on, whether it was allergies or whether it was the dryness or something environmental. know, like some awful mold or something. You don't know what's going on. And so when you said you were going to go, I was thrilled. I just, you know, I wanted you to, get checked out. It's the kind of thing where, you know, breathing is important, as you said.
Breathing is very important, and it should not be underrated.
So
and when you have trouble breathing, that's when you realize what a good thing it is.
So what happened with this appointment?
Well, I went there, and I had to wait an hour just to see the person. When I finally saw her, it wasn't my regular doctor. First thing she says is what a rough day she's having, how she's way behind on schedule, how she has to go to the bathroom, and all these and, you know, I just wanted to say, I'm the one that's sick here, that has issues, you know, at the very least, I should be the one complaining. But I let her get it out of her system.
Right,
she did, and we moved on. Finally, got to my issues. Wasn't really conclusive. All kinds of things it could be. Well, it could be asthma, could be hay fever, could be a cold, could be all sorts of things. If you really want to find out what's going on with your lungs, you got to see a pulmonologist or whatever they're called. And just nothing really conclusive. But medication was prescribed to try and narrow it down. Try this for a week, see if that works. If that doesn't work, then try this for a week, and et cetera, et cetera. So, okay, fine. Here's where modern technology takes over. She asked what pharmacy I'd like to go to. I picked the 24-hour pharmacy in the area, which I will not name for reasons that will become obvious. She was able to send the prescription to that particular pharmacy, as if by magic. That's how it works these days. Okay, great. It was sent over there. Afterwards, you were waiting for me in the waiting room. Afterwards, we took a trip over to the pharmacy with the actual pieces of paper, the actual prescriptions to hand to them.
Just the handwritten slip.
We gave it to them, and they said, okay, come back in about an hour or so. And we actually did other things, and we came back hours later when it was late at night. Different group of people were there. And when we went there to get the prescriptions,
and that's the way to do it, because there's such a big line. The afternoons, everybody's getting their prescription, but late at night, nobody's there, and it's already been filled. You just walk in, pay for it, and walk out. Right?
That's the idea. That's the theory. Anyway, didn't quite work out that way for us, because when we walked in there, they had no idea who I was. I said, "Look, I'm here to pick up these three prescriptions." Could not find me, and the woman behind the pharmacy desk just kept saying, "Oh, I feel awful." She must have said that eight times. And I'm like, "Look, honey, it's not about how you feel. It's about how I feel. I feel worse than the way you feel for losing my prescription. Do what you have to do to get this to work. Please just stop telling me how awful you feel, and let's see how competent you are." And never quite got to that stage, because they just kept running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And the thing is, that woman eventually wound up leaving. I heard her say how much she really wanted to go home. And eventually she got her wish, and they sent her home. Cook the heroes three times, and she was off in the balloon. Well, then that left one person behind the desk. And all these people kept coming in wanting things done, and they were getting upset at various other problems. And so I was wondering, well, who's dealing with my problem while this is going on? Eventually, they had to actually call the doctor somehow, track them down, because there was no evidence at all that I was entitled to any prescription.
Yeah, even, like they're there at night.
Well, they found her.
I guess.
Somehow they tracked her down.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah, they found her and were able to pretty much confirm that, yeah, I wasn't trying to pull some kind of scam, and I was entitled to these prescriptions. About an hour had passed at that point.
Because they lost the paper prescription, they lost the record in the computer, and they lost the actual filled prescriptions. They didn't do anything right. The night shift came on, had no idea about it, and here you are showing up, and it's going on a half hour or an hour, and late at night, you're now waiting for other people and their prescriptions before people can actually get to you to attend to their screw-up.
Yeah, and people are there flirting with the person behind the counter, having these long conversations, nothing's getting done on my end when they finally do track down the doctor and realize that I'm entitled to a prescription. After they finally put it all together, that's when they tell me, "Oh, by the way, this is going to cost $400. $400 just for a prescription, three prescriptions that I thought were maybe going to cost about $30 or $40
for treatment of mild breathing, allergy or something like that.
And so I said, shot in the dark, here's my insurance card, let's see what happens with that. And that didn't really do anything at all. As I said, I have a really lousy insurance plan, and they don't really cover anything. But at that point, I'm saying to myself, okay, this is my health I'm dealing with here. This is what I'm supposed to be getting. So fine, whatever. Just add it to the list of things that have gone wrong today, and let's be done with this. So I gave him my credit card, and instantly, as soon as they tried to put that charge through, my credit card froze up, and there was it was suspended, fraudulent activity suspected, because even my credit card company knows that a pharmacy trying to charge $400 in prescription, that's something that should not be happening. And at that point, I realized, I've had enough. I've had enough signs from fate saying, this is a bad idea. Don't do this. And I took that as the final one. I said, that's it. I'm out. There's nothing more I can do. You lost my prescription. I went through hell to even get an appointment today. And now my credit card doesn't even work because of this. And plus, I feel better. So, I'm just going to leave now. I took one thing. They gave me an emergency inhaler in case I actually do have asthma and I need to.
And that was the cheapest.
That was the cheapest one. That was only about $30 or something. Yeah, I was happy with that. Yeah. And, I just walked out of there feeling like, okay, you know what? I just saved $400 because of this stupidity. Of course, I wasted a lot of time. And since then, I've felt pretty good, actually. And maybe that's all I needed, is that kind of kick in the pants to get started. And get this. I'm getting calls now from the drugstore computer saying that they have a prescription for me and they want me to come in and pick it up and pay for it. I'm not going to do that. So, okay, with all this that I pointed out right now, I think it indicates that there's something really wrong with our healthcare system in this country, where anyone has to jump through all these hoops just to get basic treatment for a rather mild complaint. But we've seen long waits, we've seen inappropriate diagnoses and interpretations, incompetence, huge, vast expenses that nobody should be expected to cover. I mean, imagine if I had something really serious, how much that would have cost. And insurance that, when it does cover things, cost way too much money, way too much, things people cannot afford. So with all that in mind, imagine how I felt when I heard that U.S. District Judge Roger Vinson of Florida had decided just yesterday that the Health Care Reform Act is unconstitutional and should not happen at all. Yeah. I mean, this country just simply floors me sometimes. What we had to go through to get to the stage where we actually have some minimal health care reform, just to have all these people jump on it and say, oh, my God, this is unfair. This can't happen. We have to go back to the Stone Ages. And you asked a very good question, Kyle, in the middle of all this. Mm-hmm. Your question was,
excuse me,
would you like to ask the question yourself? Or?
Who is really being hurt by us having health care?
Yes. Who is being hurt? Now, I hear people saying it should not be forced upon anybody. People should not be expected to get health care if they don't want to get health care. And I just ask them to maybe record that onto one of those tape recorders and figure out how to play it back. Play it back. Listen to yourself saying that. That nobody should be forced to get health care. Health care is an essential thing. It's like saying nobody should be forced to not starve.
Or drink sanitary water.
Yeah.
Potable water.
This is something that is a basic right. Now, the thing that gets these people in the first place is that, they got to pay some minimal amount to have that right. And for people who cannot afford it, then obviously there's another way to handle this. For people who can afford it, why would you not want to have your health covered? It doesn't make any sense. But basically, it's this whole mentality of, well, I have the right to be completely irresponsible and just not take care of myself and do all kinds of irresponsible, horrible things.
Freedom to be stupid.
Yeah. And I think we've had enough freedom to be stupid over the past couple of decades for us to want to try something else now. And like Kyle said, who is it hurting exactly? I want to know specifically, who is the healthcare reform hurting?
It's insane.
It's not helping enough. I agree with that. It's not helping enough. And when you ask people, do you approve of the Health Care Reform Act? A lot of people say no because it doesn't go far enough, and then they get lumped in with the same people who don't want any health care at all.
Right.
But
it's an incredible expense for employers and stuff, too, to be able to provide these things privately and have these plans. That's why one of the reasons I think employees or the human resources are the first thing to go in company settings. But that's where a lot of people get their insurance, is through a career or through some sort of business or institution like that. And I myself have played that game a little bit. And then recently, in the past couple of years, I've been paying for private insurance myself. I have an actual plan, though. I don't have catastrophic like what you're talking about. And I've told you this a couple times, that recently my provider offered lower plans. And this is actually happening right as a lot of the healthcare stuff was passing. They offered lower plans. So I switched plans, like a couple different concessions. I had to change a couple things, or at least be aware that I wouldn't get covered about certain things. But essentially, it didn't change. And I ended up having my healthcare bill reduced by more than half. Significant reduction in my monthly rate. Mm-hmm. And I got additional services. Like I'd never had dental coverage.
I can't believe, for what you're paying a very small amount,
I think. I pay about $150 a month.
About $150 a month, and you get dental, and you get...
Copay.
And
for prescriptions and doctor visits.
All right. And you know, are there any kind of hoops you have to jump through? Do you have to go to one particular place? Or?
Well, there's tricky things. I just recently found this out when I was getting some lab tests done, that I get... $200 a year, I think, for doctor visits that are elective, something to that effect. And so if you get any testing or anything done, it was out of pocket. That was under the previous plan that was twice as expensive. Now that's all included.
Wow. Now, you're from Washington State, so maybe this is something that's specific to Washington and isn't available in New York. But, you know, I think everybody in the country should have the same access.
Right.
I'm not sure if it's age-related, if because you're relatively young, you get a better deal than somebody who's older. These are things we should figure out. Everyone has, I think, the right to have affordable health care. It seems in some parts of the country that's already possible, and maybe there's a way to get there locally as well as through the nation.
Well, I want to share a little bit more with you. I think we'll trade notes about this a little bit. But the plan that I got, like I said, I mean, having been reduced and getting more features, you know, and having to be aware of a certain parts of the way that they process things. You know, that's a small price to pay for actual coverage, and just the fact that they were reducing it in light of a lot of the healthcare bill and that stuff being passed, I can't help but associate it with that legislation. And I'm fearful that this great, this sort of adjustment, this plan that I've switched to, which for all intents and purposes is much better as far as expense and flexibility and working for me as far as being covered.
Right.
I'm afraid that that's going to go away because of these people like this guy in Florida you just mentioned. So I don't know. We'll have to hear more about this kind of news. I don't know.
See, I think it's really important to have a basic standard that everybody is entitled to. And state by state, I guess it can vary in different ways. Some things covered, some things not covered, certain plans available in one place and not another.
Right.
But we all deserve and should demand the right to not have to lose our life savings to an illness, to lose our homes to an illness, have to go through situations much worse than what I went through on Friday, where you go to the pharmacy and you have to spend a huge amount of money just to be well. Or, that should never happen to anybody.
Or just like the annual checkup, like when you went to get checked up. I did that a while ago, and I alluded to this earlier, that I went in and got lab tests, but I got charged a whole bunch of money because my yearly allotment for covered expenses was $200, and the visit to that doctor was $200 alone, and I had, you know, like $1,000 in lab bills just to get like blood tests for diseases and like cholesterol and, you know, basic lab tests.
Basic stuff everybody should get every year.
Exactly. And now with this, the change in the plan, I've, you know, changed some things and reduced the monthly payment, but now that ability, all lab tests and all of those kinds of things that go along with a doctor visit for a regular checkup, that's all included. And I think that's the that is the kind of the intent behind the legislation was that people can go to the doctor, they can get checked up, they can have health and wellness in their life and find out what their numbers are and
right.
find out if they have a disease or if they are at risk in any way.
And another thing, excuse me, I still got the cough. Another thing, it should not be so complicated and confusing that it'll drive you insane. For instance, when I went for checkups in September and got bills after my insurance basically refused just about all of it, the bills came from so many different sources. I went here at Stony Brook, and I got a bill from the hospital. I got a bill from doctors. I got a bill from different kinds of doctors. All sorts of – everyone had their own little independent bill.
Right.
And I was just waiting for them all to come in so that I could – basically scope it all out.
Right.
I had to make graphs and diagrams to see what I was being billed for, by whom, and if I was being billed twice for the same thing. And then the interesting thing here, instead of just paying it right away, I sort of sat back and waited for it all to kind of sort itself out, because you get a bill one day, then next week you get another bill from somebody else,
right.
then 2 weeks after that, a third bill. And I kind of wanted to see, okay, when is it going to stop? When are they going to stop coming up with new ways to charge me?
Wait for an answer.
and basically, after a month or two, and yeah, I don't mind waiting a month or two for this. They kind of settled. They settled and they stayed the same amount. But then something else happened. The insurance all of a sudden paid something a month and a half later for no reason, no behest of mine. And then they took something back a few days after that. It's like they said, we need this back. We're going to take a few more bucks. It was just kind of weird watching this, because the amount was not the same 3 months afterwards without me doing anything. It just changed on its own.
Right.
So I think if I had paid all the bills right away, I would have lost out. Another thing that happens is that if you aren't covered at all for a particular thing, somehow the rate still goes down. Let's say a doctor charges $500 for some procedure, and your insurance says, you know what, that's not covered. All of a sudden, the bill becomes $150 instead, because there was an insurance company involved somewhere along the line. It's so weird and crazy, and this is what drives people mad, is just trying to figure it all out. Should not be that difficult, should not be that complex. And I think that's what contributes to a lot of people getting unhealthy, is just the stress of this. And
yeah.
I choose not to even deal with the stress. We went overseas, and
yep.
the bills kept coming in. They're getting more and more angry. I came back. Okay, this is where it's going to settle. And okay, this is what I'll pay.
Yeah.
This is something the insurance company should have taken care of. This should be resubmitted, et cetera, et cetera.
I've sort of adopted the same attitude. I did the same thing, and I'm still waiting to hear. I mean, all of the insurance plan has transitioned over to this new, cheaper policy,
mm-hmm.
and now, you know, extra tests and all of that stuff, it's all included and paid for. But the bill for the checkup that I had is still pending with the hospital or the clinic that I go to. And so I've talked to them, and they've changed the coding in the bill, and they're going to make it medical instead of preventative, but it's only going to reduce things a certain amount.
Whatever sorcery they use, they're able to make numbers get smaller and go different places.
I'm just waiting for a new bill to be sent to me, because, you know, whatever, I call, I try to check in, try to stay on top of it. And then finally, when we left for overseas, I was like, you know, I don't care. You know, and we were talking about this, and you gave me a little bit of encouragement. It's like, it's not going to go to collections this year.
Actually, mine did go to collections. I'm getting calls from 800 numbers that say, yeah, this is in regards to a debt. And,
yeah.
The thing is, I've already paid that. They won't say which one it is, but I've already paid pretty much everything. So
right.
I think what happened was it went to collections and then I paid. So they have to sort that out. That's not my concern either. And it's just... You play the game as much as they want you to play the game, and if you don't play it, then I think you come out ahead, because they just get all aggravated.
Yeah, you have your head.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I still have a little bit of a cough, but I'm breathing fine, and didn't spend all that money, and just had a fun day of watching incompetent people butt their heads together. That's the state of healthcare in this country right now. I can imagine in other places how easy it is to simply go in, get checked out, get a prescription, and become better. Hopefully one day we'll get there. We have to fight for it, though. We have to have the equivalent of tea parties on the other side that are loud and abrasive and demand certain things and get them. Otherwise, we're just going to keep going right back to where we were and not getting anything. And we'll fool ourselves into thinking that we tried something and it didn't work. We never even tried it. All right. You know, okay, let's get to Egypt, because in Egypt they're trying new things on and finding that they fit quite well.
Oh, my Lord.
It's something else, isn't
Have
it?
Have you seen Egypt today?
Egypt is, well, this just happened right before we came in, and it was interesting to look at the different websites. Basically, CNN reports it as President Mubarak to stand down, and watching some of the European coverage, they say that he refuses to stand down. So which is it? Well, he says he's not going to run for re-election in
September.
Is it September? Yeah, September, when the next election is going to be. So he's going to stay till September. In fact, right. He says he didn't want to stay anyway past September. I love the way dictators try and get sympathy
or
and
know,
just dignity back.
Yeah.
It's obvious that there are millions of people in the street calling for you to leave right away. And it's like, well, you know what? I didn't want to stay. I'm going to stay till September, and then I'll leave, which is what I wanted to do originally. So thank you. Goodbye. Totally out of touch with what's going on in the street. The same thing happened in Tunisia only last week. Almost word for word, the leader there said he was going to stand down. And then inside of a day or two, he was on an airplane heading out of the country. So something similar is going to happen with Mubarak. And the question now is, where is it going to go from here? Basically, you have all these regimes that are starting to I guess, face people power in memory of what happened to the Iron Curtain back in the late 80s, early 90s. So where is this going to spread? Is it going to go to Syria next? Is Algeria going to finally have some kind of reaction in a strong way that leads to change? Who knows? It's fascinating to watch, though. And the thing that I find amazing is that we're able to watch this on Al Jazeera, because on the Canadian dish, we get Al Jazeera English on channel 516.
It's pretty cool.
They don't get it on DirecTV. They don't get it on Dish Network. I do know that Link TV, which is carried on both of those American satellite networks, carries Al Jazeera English for an hour or two a day, maybe a little more. But it's not the same thing as being able to turn on the TV at any time and see what Al Jazeera is up to. According to this article in the Huffington Post, Al Jazeera English is blacked out across most of the United States, other than in a handful of pockets across the United States, including Ohio, Vermont, Washington, D.C. Cable carriers do not give viewers the choice of watching Al Jazeera. That corporate censorship comes as American diplomats harshly criticize the Egyptian government for blocking internet communication inside the country, and as Egypt attempts to block Al Jazeera from broadcasting. And you have to wonder, when dictatorial governments clamp down on a particular broadcaster, that particular broadcaster must be doing something right. And maybe if we actually watched this channel, we'd see that they have the best coverage of anybody. Mm-hmm. And live scenes from Egypt and amazing interviews with presidents of nations and all sorts of people that really know what's going on. Maybe then the people in this country would say, wow, it's not the same thing as Al-Qaeda. Al Jazeera is actually a legitimate network. Why not give the people the chance? You know, it's one thing to block something on the government level and say, you're not allowed to watch this. It's another thing to block it on the corporate level and just say, well, you know what? There's no space. There's no demand. We're not going to cover this at all. And people just live in ignorance. It's not really fair. So call your cable company, call your satellite company, and say you want Al Jazeera English. So
I had no idea.
What?
No, I had no idea. That is, I mean, you got to tell them. You got to say that you want this so that they actually know, so they can't just sort of brush it aside like that. I mean, this is really kind of startling to me that it's been censored by conglomerates in this country. But no surprise, actually.
Yeah. According to this article, Al Jazeera follows a public broadcasting model similar to the BBC, CBC, NPR. It's largely funded by the government of Qatar, basically they take a hands-off approach to the content. Al Jazeera is the enemy of authoritarian governments around the Middle East, which attempt to block it. The network, however, covers much more than the Middle East and has bureaus in Latin America, more bureaus, actually, than CNN and the BBC. As proud as we are of our Middle Eastern coverage, a spokesman said, we are in other places in the world that are never, never seen on television in American homes. So, yeah, give a call. Cablevision, DirecTV, Dish Network, Comcast, Time Warner, call those people. More people who call and say, we want Al Jazeera English, especially in a time like this where they're in the news. They leaked some documents last week. They received some documents that basically embarrassed the Palestinian Authority. and were widely criticized in that community for doing this. This is what journalists do. This is kind of like the WikiLeaks model, where you basically, you get information, you release it to the public, you let the chips fall where they may. You know, people are saying that WikiLeaks helped inspire the Tunisian revolution because of the documents that were found to involve the Tunisian government being rather corrupt. Tunisian people read this, got more and more incensed, and eventually drove their government out. And then that spread across to Egypt. So what you're seeing right now could very well be a direct result of organizations like WikiLeaks. Incredible to think of it that way, but wow, it just shows the power is always in individual hands. Mm-hmm. And the world can change. The world can change here, too. It can change in many different places. I hope people get a wide variety of sources so they can pretty much decide for themselves. That's always what it's about, deciding for yourself. Here's something interesting, too. Do you know the tear gas canisters that they're firing at the demonstrators, or they were firing at the demonstrators a while back last week, they're made in the United States. It's one of the few things that we still make in this country. Imagine being hit by a tear gas canister and looking at it, and it says on the bottom there, made in the USA. That's kind of rubbing people in Cairo the wrong way, and it sort of seems like a message, a big middle finger from the United States to there. If we're going to make tear gas canisters, maybe we shouldn't be so proud as to where they're made, and maybe we should also rethink where we send tear gas canisters. Not the best.
I'm amazed that we make things.
I am too. I mean, not saying I'm not proud that we make things in this country. I think we could make better things and maybe, you know, be a little more responsible in who we give them to.
Right.
Right? It's not that much to ask. but last week, the police were firing on the demonstrators in Cairo. And now the police have pretty much been driven away by the army. And the army is seen as the friends of the people. Now, this is something that I think ties into the whole gun issue. Because you cannot have a single revolution in any country, and I defy anybody to prove me wrong here, you cannot have a single successful revolution where the government changes without the support of the military, right? It happened in the Philippines. It happened in all of the Eastern Bloc countries, and it happened here in Egypt as well. If the military stands against you, you will lose. It's just a simple matter. Check out Myanmar if you don't believe me on that. When the military changes sides and supports the people, that's when the people win. That's when they change the governments. In this particular case, in Egypt, the army has said they're with the people. They will not fire on the people. They will not stop legal demonstrations or peaceful demonstrations. And that's a very bad thing for any dictatorial government to hear the army say that. So now, with all this in mind, with an army on your side, an army that has plenty of artillery, an army that has plenty of weaponry, they're going to have that covered. They're going to take care of any dictatorial government and drive them out with that artillery. Your particular bits of arms may be great for target shooting, might be fun to show off to your friends, or maybe fool yourself into thinking you're protecting your family by having it under your pillow, but it's not going to bring down a government. You need the army to bring down the government, and you can't do it without them. And they don't need your guns to do it. They don't. They need your bodies in the street, your live bodies, that is, in the street, protesting and getting the word out. Speech is a lot more important than anything else. But that's really the most valuable thing that you have to help sway the people with the guns to do as you wish, to support the right side. So this argument that we must stockpile weapons to overthrow a potentially dictatorial government in the United States, it's nonsense because it's never going to work unless you have the support of the military. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's a very rational argument. I've never really heard it put quite that way, but I concur. And I think that's the way to go.
It's not an anti-gun argument either. It's simply looking at the facts as to how these things work. Back in 1700s, it was different. We didn't have a massive military then. We had a lot of people fighting.
The military was militia. That was people.
Exactly. It was a lot more.
Here, it's much more organized now, and I think that. It's really illustrated well when you think about the branch system in the United States and a regime or a government, a dictator. You know, the executive branch controls the military. The policing and all of that is the is sort of the manifestation of the executive branch and that control. And when you have the military on your side and supporting you, protesting someone who is in control, they're basically siding. They're basically
usurping.
Usurping.
Yes.
Yes.
Good word.
Usurping the figurehead and answering to the people that he is responsible for and is supposed to be representing. So I think it's very cool. That's an interesting way of looking at revolution.
Yes, revulsion and revolution. But let's go into delay so that we can open this up to our listeners. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. We're going to take phone calls in just a moment. Let me just throw a few switches here so that we go into delay land nice and smoothly. And we'll be back right after this announcement from this person.
Hi, this is John Schofield, and you're listening to Radio Free Long Island, WUSB in Stony Brook.
And here we are back, and hopefully everything went smoothly. No, actually, Kyle, you're not here yet. It takes a little bit of time for you to show up. I think you're here now, though. Have you arrived?
Hello, yes.
Okay.
I think I'm here.
There you are. Just got to adjust a few dials and things like that, make sure we sound good. Okay, I think we're fine. We're fine. So a couple of stories related to guns this week, just to give people an idea of how out of control our country is and how we really need some common sense. Florida police trying to figure out how a five-year-old boy came into possession of a loaded handgun that he dropped inside pre-kindergarten class. Oh, come on, Kyle. You can't be surprised at this.
What?
Five-year-old kids bringing guns to kindergarten. Old news. Happens all the time. A female pre-kindergarten teacher at Mosley Elementary School in Palatka was giving a music lesson last Tuesday morning when she noticed a small .22 caliber handgun fall out of the boy's pocket. The firearm did not go off. No one was hurt. But the boy, along with the gun, were promptly brought to school administrators. They alerted school security and police, having determined there was no immediate danger to the school. The boy is both initially a suspect in this thing, but also a victim. This is very rare, they said. Imagine a five-year-old suspect. He told authorities he found the firearm inside the vehicle that he had come to school in, one which they say belonged to the youngster's stepfather. This is the kind of thing that happens when you have guns everywhere. Kids get their hands on them. Sometimes people get hurt. Sometimes people don't get hurt, but it's wrong either way.
Was it loaded?
You know, I don't know if they discharged a few rounds to see. Probably was, since they said it didn't go off. I'd imagine they...
Wow.
Yeah, they say it's loaded here, the bottom of the story. Yeah, it's
Did he even
realize
what it was?
Not much good having a gun that's not loaded, Kyle. It's no... not much of a...
Happiness is a loaded gun.
Exactly. Then you have the story out of Nevada. A city councilwoman from Nevada fatally shot her husband, then herself. Called 911 an hour before to report that she was about to kill herself and to report to this particular place to clean up the mess. The Las Vegas Sun reported last Wednesday the bodies of Donna Fairchild and Bill Fairchild were found before dawn on Tuesday at their home in Mesquite, about 80 miles northwest of Las Vegas. Donna Fairchild had faced removal as the city's delegate to a regional business organization at a council meeting scheduled for the night of her death. It concerned misappropriation of about $90 in funds. This is what someone's life comes down to. $90. She kills her husband and herself because she can't face the possibility of being disgraced in that manner. They've been married for 21 years.
What?
21 years, and it takes something like that to set somebody off. Gun in the house makes it all the more simple to execute those wishes. How about this? Back to Florida. I think we just go back to Florida a lot, stories like this. A mother in Tampa has admitted in detail to killing her two teenage children. Police checking on the family at the request of a relative found Julie Schneckner on the back porch of her home Friday morning, dressed in blood-covered clothing. They found her 13-year-old son dead in the family's SUV, which had been parked in the garage. Her 16-year-old daughter dead in the upstairs bedroom. A police spokesman said she told us that they talked back. They were mouthy. That was basically what triggered her into doing that. And the ease of having a gun right next to her made it all the simpler. Meanwhile, you have this story actually came out a little while ago. Former police chief found not guilty of involuntary manslaughter in the 2008 death of an 8-year-old boy who accidentally shot himself with a micro Uzi machine gun during a gun show. Just an accident. These things happen.
Wait, a loaded micro Uzi at the gun
what
show?
What the hell is what is a kid doing? I don't care if you call it a micro Uzi. It's still a damn Uzi. Kids shouldn't be having it, and somebody should be held accountable, but not in this country. In this country, it's just, it's an accident. These things happen. Move on. So, yeah, folks, we got a problem here. We got a problem with all these guns, and people don't know how to use them, or people who do know how to use them and lose a few marbles, because they lose those marbles after they've gotten the gun in the first place. And we just are setting it up for them to do horrible things to other people as well as themselves. Here's a letter from a listener. Then we're going to take some phone calls. 631-632-9872. I was listening to your show yesterday. It reminded me that I wanted to write in response to your previous show and recent shows about guns and gun control. I've always valued your opinions as they have really helped me understand many of my own feelings and a lot over the years. The points you and Kyle have been raising have me divided on my own feelings about guns. Having been raised around guns, I've always been pretty whatever about people owning and being fans of the firearm. In fact, I myself own a Ruger 10/22 that I enjoy taking to the range to shoot at paper targets. However, I do agree with most, if not all, of what you say about stricter regulations and rules for obtaining and owning guns. Before my father bought me my rifle, he required that I take a basic gun safety course. So I attended this gun safety course put on by members of the NRA. Sounds fine to me so far. When I went in, I felt like I had a pretty established belief that the only reason I would ever want to own a gun is simply for the fun of shooting targets. I had, up until this point, never felt the need to own a gun for protection. Throughout the class, they repetitiously showed and told us of scenarios where we may have to shoot someone. They emphasized the shoot-to-kill philosophy, and because if you don't, the guy might have a gun, and then he's going to kill you. They showed us many different types of concealed weapons holders that give instant access to pistols and purses, holsters, etc., that if you came upon someone carrying one, you would seriously never know. All this had somehow changed me. I left there feeling more paranoid than ever. I felt the need to own a gun for protection. I was in combat mode, as you so appropriately named it. Well, the paranoia eventually wore off, and being pretty broke, I never went down and actually bought a gun. But to this day, when I hear that bump in the night, I do often wish I had a pistol next to my bed. I want to be able to own a weapon simply for the sake of being a hobbyist, but now that I have been corrupted by the need for protection, I often wonder about my motives. So on the one hand, this gun safety course told me how to safely use a gun, but on the other hand, it also put me in combat mode. Requiring people to take a gun safety class might not be the right approach to stronger gun control. And thanks, Brian, for that amazing letter. It really does open up some eyes. He also asks, I'm kind of curious how you feel about violent video games and movies and how they might lead to an increased interest in owning guns. And that's a good point, too. Obviously, violence in any form is a troubling sign. But you can't ban ideas, you can't ban thoughts, you can't ban words or entertainment or things like that based on somebody's moral convictions. But what you can do is study why something has an effect on somebody, why we are attracted to this sort of thing in the first place. And we can counter that with other things, with other words, balance it out a bit so that people actually get a chance to work it out in their own heads. It's not as easy to do that when you're simply firing at will, wherever you feel like shooting your piece, you know. It's but really good points there as far as the gun safety, and I think that's something that needs to be looked at. Are people really polluting minds with this kind of paranoia?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the media has a big part and people sort of painting a rosy picture or painting a picture that is one of fear. And
people tell you to be afraid. There's something there. They've got an agenda, you know. Anyway, let's take some phone calls. 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Greetings from Shirley.
Hi, Shirley. How are you?
Hey, John from Shirley. How are you, sir?
Pretty good.
Actually, you just got a letter or an email where you briefly touching on the video game thing. I'd like to think of myself as somewhat of a pacifist. I really don't. I'm terrified of guns. But I'll tell you, those Call of Duty games, you know, the first-person shooters, I play them like a maniac. Uh-huh. I love them, and I don't even know why.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it's good to release sometimes, to get things out of your system. There's no harm in that. It's just when you start translating it over to your everyday life, the way you treat people and the things you do, that's when it can have an adverse effect both on you and on others.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think the games, for example, might desensitize you perhaps, or your thought patterns. Because I find myself thinking, you know, if someone cuts me off in traffic or something, I go, you know, if I only had that flashbang grenade or something, or you start going through the arsenal that's available in the game, and I don't know, it's perhaps not very safe thinking.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thanks for that opinion.
All right, you take care, sir.
All right, take care. Let's take another call. Good evening, you're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel. This is Bosna from Bulgaria.
How did I know we were going to get a call from Bulgaria? Okay, what's on your mind this week?
I'm in Egypt's time zone, for one thing.
You're on what time zone?
We share a time zone with Egypt.
Oh, you're in Egyptian time. Wow. So what time is it in Egypt and in Bulgaria?
1:55 a.m. on the Wednesday.
Wow. Well, what do you make out of all this, revolution thing going on over there?
Nothing that was on Democracy Now! Earlier. That Egypt's government so far has been the largest recipient of U.S. aid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because if you look at who is supporting the people and who is not supporting the people, you might be kind of surprised. Iran, for instance, supporting the people on the street. United States supposedly supporting the people on the street. Palestinian Authority supporting the government of Egypt. It's really all over the place.
The thing is, large aid that's been sent from the U.S. to the government is actually being spent for U.S. weaponry, or a lot of it is,
mm-hmm.
like large tank deals and F-16s and stuff like that is being bought by the government of Egypt with use of this so-called aid to Egypt. And it seems to me a lot like money laundering of some sort. Somehow, I don't know, it's weird.
It certainly is, and a little distressing in many ways. But I think this week coming up is going to be a very interesting week if we can watch Al Jazeera or otherwise some other network that might have some kind of interesting coverage without a lot of commercials, we'll be entertained.
One thing, if I may, it's the freedom to bear arms, not firearms. People, get a musket or something.
Okay. All right, good advice. Thanks again to our friend from Bulgaria. And that's going to just about do it for us here for this particular edition of Off the Wall. If you want to write to us, otw@2600.com. We will see you. We will see you next time. Yeah, next Tuesday night. In the meantime, stay calm and communicate with those around you. Good night.
Mother got us in suicide singing, oh my, oh my God. And my mother got us living genocide singing, oh my, oh my God. And my mother got us living suicide singing, oh my, oh my God. Oh my God. Slam, bam, I come on the scene, but like gasoline, you can tell I'm in the tank, like money in the bank. I smell appealing, but I'm toxic, can send you reeling without an inkling. Keep you thinking, cause you gave cash to the feds, left your school district for dead. You up in the head, but still they saying nothing's wrong. Selling firewater by outlawing the bong. Still believing the system is working, while half of my people are still out of working. Anonymous notes left in the pockets and coats of judges and jurors from Frisco to Jersey. Threats and protests, politicians, mob debts, trumped up charges and phony arrests. Staged a lethal injection the night before the election, cause he got donation from the prison guards union. Oh my God. And my mother got us living suicide singing. Oh my God. And my mother got us living genocide singing. Oh my God. And my mother got us living suicide singing. Oh my God. Oh my God. Listening to my stethoscope on a rope. Internal lullabies, human cries. Thumps and silence, the language of violence. Algorithmic, cataclysmic, seismic, biorhythmic.
You can make a life longer, but you can't save it. You can make a clone and then you try to enslave it. Stealing DNA samples from the unborn, and then you coming after us because we sampled a James Brown horn. Scientists whose god is progress, a four-headed sheep is their latest project. The CIA running like they're Jones from Indiana, but they still won't talk about that Jones in Guyana. This ain't no cartoon. No one slips on bananas. Do you really think that that car killed Diana? Hell, I shot Ronald Reagan. I shot JFK. I slept with Marilyn. She sung me happy birthday. My, oh my God. In my mind, they got a Stephen suicide singing. Oh my, oh my God. In my mind, they got a Stephen genocide singing. Oh my, oh my God. In my mind, they got a Stephen suicide singing. Oh my. Politicians got lipstick on the collar. The whole media started to holler. But I don't give a f*** who they screwing in private. I wanna know who they screwing in public. Robbing, cheating, stealing, white collar criminal, McDonald eating. You deserve a beating. Send you home a weeping with the fat bill for your Caribbean weekend. But just about anything they can bust us. False advertising saying horrors of justice. You telling the youth don't be so violent. Then you drop bombs on every single continent. Mandatory minimum sentence. He got caught with a pocket full of medicine. Do that again, another 10. I'm in the pen, I feel so mad. I want to bomb an institution. Singing, oh my God. In my mind, they got a Stephen suicide singing. Oh my God. In my mind, they got a Stephen suicide singing. Oh my God. In my mind, they got a Stephen suicide singing. Oh my, oh my God, oh my God. And we say na 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 na. And we say na 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 na. See, we keep moving on, moving on, 'cause it never gonna stop.
Oh, kids, we have a something skipping, right? We don't like that. We don't like it at all. But anyway, this is Finn. This is Finn's Revolution, running until 9 p.m., and we have special guests tonight. Mr. George Galloway will be on visiting us at about 7:30, all the way from London, to comment on and reflect on the issues currently going on in the Middle East. So stay tuned, plus some great ticket giveaways to the movies tonight. So stay tuned for that.